Chonggyu are idioms linked to ancient literature. Are they the key to Chinese language and culture, or a waste of time? Hello and welcome to the Hacking Chinese podcast. In this week's episode, we are going to talk about Chonggyu, which is a specific type of idiom in Chinese. This is a topic I touched on in last week's Q&A episodes, where one of the questions was about Chonggyu. And I mentioned that there is an article about this on Hacking Chinese, but it was written in 2013, that's 11 years ago, and maybe I've changed my mind since then, so let's revisit the topic and talk about Chonggyu properly. These idioms certainly have a stronger claim to being culturally and historically significant than most other expressions, but does that mean that we as second language learners of Chinese should invest a lot of time in learning them, or are we better off investing our time elsewhere? Before we get to that though, let's talk a little bit about what Chonggyu are. So these are typically four-character idioms that are derived from classical literature, and there are some exceptions to this. Some are not four characters, and some are not derived from classical literature, but that is generally speaking the case. And as a learner, it can be difficult to just see if something is a Chonggyu, because not all four-character phrases are Chonggyu. But this distinction is not terribly important in this discussion, so I think knowing that they are four-character set phrases, usually from classical literature, is good enough. To fully understand these idioms, it's rarely enough to just look at the characters. They are rather opaque and have meaning beyond the literal meaning of the characters. This means that we need to study the context in which it appeared or the story behind the Chonggyu. To illustrate this, let's use 自相矛盾, which means paradoxical or self-contradictory, and I also mentioned this in last week's episode. And this is not immediately apparent what it means based on just the characters. So 自 means self, 相 mutual, 矛 is a kind of weapon, a spear, and 盾 is shield. And self-mutual spear-shield doesn't mean much, so you need to go beyond the literal meaning. So the story here is that there was a merchant, and he claimed that his spears could penetrate anything, and that his shields could withstand any attack. And of course, a clever bystander asks, okay, what happens if I use your spear and attack your shield? And this is clearly a contradiction. You cannot have something that penetrates anything, and then also have a shield that can withstand any attack. And so this phrase, 自相矛盾, is used in modern Chinese to mean paradoxical or contradictory. This is then an example of a Chonggyu, which is what we're talking about in this episode. It's worth mentioning that there are other types of idioms in Chinese. So for example, we have 俗语, 歇后语, and 谚语. But students, teachers, and learning materials seldom obsess about these, so I will leave them for another time. Let's get back to my story with Chonggyu, because I think it's rather representative. I've talked with many students that say that they've also experienced this. And so it's easy to think that you study a Chonggyu like 自相矛盾 that I just talked about, and you think, this is pretty cool. There is a story that goes with it. It's culturally significant, and maybe it's even wise in some sense. Maybe not this particular Chonggyu, but there are other Chonggyu that encapsulates the wisdom of the ancients, as it were. So I then proceeded to buy lots of books that teach these idioms to foreigners, and sometimes also to Chinese kids, because that's also a thing. And I tried to use them whenever I spoke Chinese, and people seemed pretty impressed, or at least they were happy that I tried. And so I kept doing this because it seemed true. Yes, Chonggyu is the key to Chinese language and culture, and if I want to speak advanced Chinese, I really need these Chonggyu. Later, after having studied Chinese for a few more years, I realized that this was all an illusion. Most of the Chonggyu that I had learned had very limited usage, and the ones that I used were almost always used incorrectly. People did respond positively, but it's more like, oh, look at the foreigner, he's trying to use Chonggyu, how cute. It's not like, wow, his Chinese is advanced. Because I used them incorrectly, and people were too polite to tell me so. To show you an example, I will mention a Chonggyu that appears in one of the textbooks I used as a beginner in Sweden. And the Chonggyu is 十全十美. And I think it was included because it contains four characters that are quite easy and that most beginners will encounter very quickly. The translation provided in our textbook was perfect, and equipped with this information, I then proceeded to use this Chonggyu incorrectly a few dozen times, and it took a long time before I really realized how this Chonggyu is actually used. And the purpose with this episode is not to talk about how specific Chonggyu are used, but in this case it turned out that it's mostly used in the negative, so things are not 十全十美. And if you are going to use it in a positive sense, you can't use it for minor things like, say, agreeing to having lunch on Friday at 12 or something like that, where the word perfect would work in English. So my experience here was rather frustrating. Well, at first I didn't know I used it incorrectly, so I just kept doing it. But after a while I figured that the usage of this 成语 is very limited compared to what I thought it would be. And this is of course partly my fault. It's about study method, and that is what I'm going to talk about in this episode. I'm not saying that learning this 成语 is a waste of time in itself, but we are going to explore if it really makes sense to spend a lot of time learning 成语 if their usage is so limited. Essentially, there are three things I want to say when it comes to learning 成语 as an adult foreign language learner. The first is to expand on what I just said. 成语 is more limited than you might think. And the second is that you should always learn 成语 with a sentence. And the third is that you actually don't need 成语. So let's dig a little deeper into learning 成语. And we had the example with 十全十美, and that clearly showed that having an English definition and then assuming that the 成语 is used as the word provided in English is clearly not a good idea. It can work in some cases. For example, 自相矛盾, paradoxical or self-contradictory, actually isn't that hard to figure out how it works based on the English translation. But this is rarely the case. This is an exception. 成语 really are quite hard to use, so it's not enough to just know the story, you know, a definition or description of the meaning and usage of the 成语. There are many other factors that are not at all obvious to learners and that can take a very long time to pick up on. So, for example, I mentioned that 十全十美 is often used in the negative, and there is no way to know that unless you learn this 成语 simply by reading and listening a lot, which would be fine, but by then you would be a very advanced student by the time you start using this spontaneously, because this isn't a high-frequency phrase compared to other phrases and words in the language. I've spent a lot of time writing in Chinese because, well, I like writing, as I'm sure most readers of Hacking Chinese will know, and I've tried to use a lot of 成语, and my passive understanding was quite good quite early because I spent a lot of time with 成语, as I mentioned. And often I had a feeling that there should be a 成语 I could use here, I found it or thought of it, and then try to use it. And then I played a little game with myself. I gave myself 1 point if I used it correctly, and 成语 gained 1 point if I used it incorrectly. And I almost always lost, because, as I said, using 成语 is not easy. I think the key problem is that the scope and the situations in which a certain 成语 can be used is, as I've said before, more limited than most students think. And when you learn vocabulary in general, it's okay to assume that a word has a fairly broad usage. You can then use it when you speak and you write. You will receive feedback and you will gradually be able to fine-tune your model of how this word is used. And then you will home in on the correct version or the one that matches how native speakers think of this word. This means that sometimes you will be wrong, you will be using this word in a situation where it can't be used, and you will also underuse the word because there will be situations where you can use a certain word in Chinese, but you wouldn't do that in English and so you don't do it, until you've seen or heard it in context and then gradually you figure out how it's used. So you move the circle in the Venn diagram so that your understanding of how the word is used matches that of a native speaker. And I've made a primitive illustration of this in the written article on Hacking Chinese, but you don't have to check it out. It's perfectly fine to just listen. The problem is that while this works well for words, it doesn't work that well for 成语. And when you learn words up to, say, an intermediate level, these words will be fairly common and they are used a lot and they usually have a wide usage as well, otherwise they wouldn't be common. So you're not learning super specialized vocabulary as a beginner and therefore you can assume that the words you use have a broad usage. But 成语, as I said, are different. They have a very narrow usage, and so the approach used for words in general doesn't really work. It's not a good idea to just assume that it means what you think it means and then keep experimenting, because then you will do what I did with 十全十美, and you will use it 15 times and all of them will be wrong. Before I share my thoughts about how to use 成语 more accurately, let's look at another example of a 成语 that I used incorrectly for a long time, and it took me ages to figure out why I was wrong and what the key ingredient was. The 成语 in question is 不知不觉, so this is extremely common, and I think if you look at the characters, 知 is 知道的知, and 觉 is 觉得的觉, you'd think that you can almost figure out what this means. It means without knowing and without feeling it, so unconsciously or unwittingly or without noticing, which are indeed the types of definitions that you will see for this phrase if you look it up in a dictionary. So if you go out and experiment using this idiom based on what I just said, you will use it incorrectly almost all the time, which I also did. Because there is an important piece of information missing here, and that is that this chongyu is almost exclusively used about the passage of time. So for example, something happens or becomes true as time goes by, without you noticing or without you being aware of it. And as you can tell, this is much more limited than, say, the word unwittingly in English, which can be used in a lot of different circumstances that have nothing to do with the passage of time. So how do we deal with this as students of Chinese? Well, I think the correct way is to always learn chongyu in context. And I don't mean that you should just add an example sentence in your flashcard program or just study one when you learn the chongyu the first time. I mean, you should actually learn it in a sentence and you should memorize that sentence too. This means that you at least have one example of how this can be used that you know works for sure, and then you can gradually, carefully expand from there as you see other people use it in the texts that you read and in the Chinese that you listen to. But you don't just assume that it can be used as widely as other vocabulary, because that's generally not the case. So in terms of Venn diagrams, we could say that you should start with a very small circle, and then expand this based on things you read and listen to. You shouldn't just assume and experiment, because as I said, you will often be wrong. It could of course be argued that this is true for vocabulary in general, and it is, but as I said, much of the vocabulary you encounter as a beginner or intermediate learner is not limited in the same sense that chongyu are. And this is a good indication that we're doing something wrong if we're spending a lot of time as beginners or even intermediate learners learning chongyu, because they might be interesting, they have interesting stories, and they do have some significance historically, culturally, and so on. But they are still low-frequency vocabulary most of the time. Even a chongyu like 不知不觉 that I mentioned, that is extremely common among chongyu, is still not very common compared to, say, most of the things you'll find in HSK. This means that most of the time you're simply better off focusing on more common words and phrases, and this will allow you to express yourself more in Chinese and talk about things you like and write about things that interest you. It will also enable you to listen and read to interesting content, because if you learn a high-frequency word, that has a pretty high likelihood of helping you understand something you will listen to in the future. Whereas if you spend all that time on a chongyu, that will maybe not appear in any podcast you listen to in the next year. That doesn't really help. As usual, I'm not saying that it's useless to learn chongyu, I'm just saying it's a matter of opportunity cost, it's a matter of priority. Do you want to learn these idioms before you learn other things that are truly essential for your ability to communicate in Chinese? And most of the time, like I said, I think the answer is no. Now, clearly, if you enjoy the stories like I did, you can still read these stories assuming that they are in Chinese. I mean, this is excellent reading practice, but the goal needn't be to master the chongyu itself. It's simply reading practice and you're reading something interesting and you're engaging with the written language, and that's great. But trying to actively use chongyu shouldn't be a priority for most students. It's important to note that what I'm mostly talking about here is using chongyu yourself. Because if you are at some kind of advanced level, you certainly need to understand chongyu, because other people use these. It's not like they are not used in the language and Chinese people never use idioms. Of course they do, and especially if you read Chinese, you will encounter chongyu all the time. And you need to understand these just like you need to understand other low-frequency vocabulary. But that doesn't mean that you should invest lots of time trying to figure out how to use them yourself before you are on a level where this makes sense. And then you should already have seen them in context many times. And as I said earlier, to get to a point where you've seen a random chongyu 10 times in a text, you will have to have read a lot of Chinese already. So if your goal is to improve your proficiency in general, chongyu will have very little impact compared to almost anything else you can focus on. Vocabulary, grammar, pronunciation, something else. It's also possible to speak Chinese at a very advanced level, professionally or otherwise, without using a lot of chongyu. You don't actually need them to express yourself. Sure, there will be situations where using a certain chongyu might have been perfect, but there are always other ways of expressing yourself, and most people will never notice that you didn't use that chongyu that happened to be perfect in that context. Well, if you do use the right 成语, people will be impressed, I can promise you that. But if you use them incorrectly, as I did, people might think it's cool that you're trying, but that's not really the effect you're after at an advanced level. Your goal is to be able to express yourself clearly, to be able to convince others, explain tricky concepts, and so on. It is not to be the cute foreigner that tries very hard. Naturally, using language inaccurately will make you harder to understand, and that might be fine if you're a beginner or an intermediate student, but if you're trying to convey something tricky or something that is hard to understand even if you use the language correctly, you really don't want to add these things, and as I said, 成语 rarely add much in terms of communication. So to summarize, it's perfectly fine to learn about 成语 because you find them interesting or because the stories are fun. You can also learn to understand them passively, and the more advanced you get, the more worthwhile it becomes. And I've put a link in the written article, and I put it in the show notes as well, to an article over at Carl Fordham's blog, where he links to some actually useful 成语. Because this is a problem I haven't discussed, but there are lots of 成语, I mean thousands and thousands, and most of them are almost never used. So if you are going to learn 成语, you should definitely focus on those that are high frequency and used often. So check that article if you want some 成语 you can learn and count on being high frequency. When it comes to the rest, they can certainly be a key to Chinese language and culture, but it's also an expensive key you have to buy with a lot of effort and time. And for most students, that time and effort is better invested elsewhere. Thank you for tuning in to the Hacking Chinese podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. More information and inspiration about learning and teaching Chinese can be found at hackingchinese.com. See you in the next episode, and until then, good luck with your studies.